Good evening from the nation's capital, and welcome to WNTN DC. I'm your host, Ashley Williams. Tonight, we have a packed lineup for you. As the 4th of July approaches, we'll take a closer look at the National Park Service's plans for a spectacular fireworks display over the National Mall. We'll also discuss the upcoming heat wave, which will affect the entire DMV, and what you can do to stay safe and cool during the scorching temperatures. Later in the program, we'll have an exclusive interview with Mayor Bowser about the city's initiatives to combat homelessness.
My name is Donovan Parker. The July heat clung to my skin as I ascended the escalator from the depths of Capital South Metro Station. Even as night settled over DC, the air remained thick and oppressive, a humid blanket draped across the city. My dress shirt, crisp when I'd left the office just an hour earlier, now stuck uncomfortably to my back. The station, usually bustling with Hill staffers and lobbyists, had quieted to a low hum of weary commuters. I stepped onto the sidewalk, my shoes clicking against the concrete as I tuned out the muffled conversations and distant rumble of traffic. I checked my watch, 8:47 p.m., 13 minutes until I was supposed to meet Rachel at Ambar. The thought of the crowded bar, teeming with eager interns and their forced laughter, made me hesitate. It wasn't my scene, far from the quiet comfort of my apartment and the gentle glow of my computer screen. But Rachel had chosen the place, her eyes lighting up when she suggested it during our last date. "It'll be fun," she'd insisted. Her enthusiasm was infectious. Who was I to argue? After all, this was our third date, and I was trying to... what was it? Get out more, as my co-workers often suggested. I rounded the corner onto 8th Street, the bar's warm glow spilling onto the sidewalk. Already, I could hear the din of conversation and clinking glasses. A group of young professionals, still in their office attire but with loosened ties and rolled up sleeves, stumbled out onto the street, their laughter echoing off the buildings. I pushed through the heavy wooden door of Ambar, the cacophony of voices and music washing over me. The bar was packed, bodies pressed close in animated conversation. My eyes scanned the crowd, searching for Rachel. There she was, perched at a high-top table near the back, her auburn hair catching the warm glow of the Edison bulbs overhead. She spotted me and waved, a bright smile lighting up her face. As I approached, I noticed she'd already ordered me a beer. A local IPA, if I wasn't mistaken. I slid onto the stool across from her, grateful for the slight reprieve from the pressing crowd. Rachel launched into conversation, her words flowing easily as she recounted her day on the hill. I found myself relaxing, caught up in her enthusiasm. She spoke about her work as a research analyst, her hands gesticulating as she described poring over crime statistics. Her latest project involved compiling data for policymakers, a task she tackled with evident passion. She delved into a discussion of how there had been a significant uptick in reports of missing homeless individuals. Rachel's voice never changed from its upbeat and excited style as she explained the difficulties in tracking such cases. The transient nature of the homeless population made it challenging to establish concrete numbers. She speculated that many might have simply migrated to other cities, seeking better conditions or resources. I listened intently, my own thoughts turning to the implications of such statistics. The casual way Rachel discussed these disappearances struck me as oddly disconnected from the human reality they represented. But then, I supposed, that was the nature of her work, reducing complex human experiences to data points and trends. Rachel's attention shifted back to me, her eyes bright with curiosity as she inquired about my work at the State Department. I felt my shoulders tense, the weight of classified information pressing down on me. Unlike Rachel's animated descriptions of her job, my responses came out stilted and vague. I struggled to match her enthusiasm, my words falling flat as I danced around the specifics of my projects. Just as the conversation threatened to stall, a whirlwind of excitement burst upon our table. A young woman with blonde hair and a megawatt smile appeared. her eyes widening in surprise at the sight of Rachel. Rachel's face lit up, and she quickly introduced me to Amanda, her friend from college and old roommate. I extended my hand for an awkward handshake. As they caught up, I retreated into the background, sipping my beer and observing their easy rapport. Rachel asked about Amanda's brother, who lived nearby in Arlington. He had just graduated college and was starting his first job with a consulting firm in the area soon. Amanda explained that he was camping with their parents in Sierra National Forest at the moment. A flicker of concern crossed her face as she mentioned not having heard from them in a while. Rachel leaned in, her voice taking on a reassuring tone. "Come on, Amanda. If I was out camping, I wouldn't be texting either. They're probably just enjoying nature, you know." Amanda's tense expression softened, and she let out a small laugh, seeming to welcome Rachel's assurance. I tried to appear attentive as Rachel and Amanda's conversation flowed around me, their words blending into a stream of unfamiliar names and inside jokes. My gaze drifted past them, drawn to the window behind their animated faces. The night sky, visible through the glass, seemed unusually clear for a muggy DC summer evening. My gaze lingered on the night sky outside the window. A flash of lightning cut through the darkness, momentarily illuminating the street below. I blinked, trying to adjust my eyes. Another flash followed, but something was off. The lightning seemed to originate from the ground, shooting upwards into the sky. I leaned closer to the glass, squinting into the distance. It happened again. A jagged streak of light, defying nature's usual order. My mind raced for explanations. Electrical anomaly? Some weird atmospheric phenomenon? Each possibility felt more implausible than the last, but I couldn't look away. Before I could ponder further, Amanda's voice cut through my reverie. "It was nice to meet you, Donovan." I blinked, jolted back to the present moment. Amanda was standing, gathering her purse, a polite smile on her face. I realized with a start that I had no idea how long I'd been staring out the window, lost in thought.
Yes, you too, Amanda, I stammered, hoping my momentary distraction hadn't been too obvious.
As the night wore on, Rachel and I settled into a more comfortable rhythm of conversation. The din of the bar faded into background noise as we delved into topics beyond our work lives. We spoke of our families, our childhoods in different parts of the country, and the winding paths that led us to DC. Rachel's animated descriptions of her boisterous family gatherings in Michigan sounded sharply different than my own memories of quiet holidays in Virginia. As she recounted tales of her college years, I found myself sharing more than I usually would, opening up about my own experiences and the friends I'd made along the way. We compared notes on where our college friends had ended up, scattered across the country and beyond. Rachel's network seemed vast and varied. Before I knew it, the bartender was calling last orders. We stepped out into the night, the heat of the day having finally given way to a cooler breeze. The streets of Capitol Hill were quiet now, the earlier bustle replaced by the occasional passing car and the distant hum of the city. My apartment in Navy Yard was close enough to walk home, but I waited with Rachel as she ordered an Uber back to her apartment in Shaw. As we stood on the corner, the streetlights casted long shadows over our figures. Rachel thanked me for venturing out to her side of town. Her appreciation felt genuine, and I felt a twinge of guilt for my earlier reluctance. With a smile that made her eyes wrinkle at the corners, Rachel suggested I choose the venue for our next date. The Uber arrived, its headlights cutting through the darkness. Rachel gave my arm a gentle squeeze before climbing in, leaving me alone on the sidewalk. As the car pulled away, I stood for a moment, watching its taillights recede into the night.
That wraps up our sports segment for tonight. The Nationals will look to bounce back from their tough loss against the Marlins as they head into a three-game series with the Braves starting tomorrow at Nationals Park. In other news, a bizarre trend from the early 2000s seems to be making a comeback, thanks to the popular social media app TikTok. Crop circles, those mysterious patterns that appear overnight in cornfields, have been popping up across the country, and many are pointing to a viral TikTok challenge as the culprit. The trend, which encourages users to create intricate designs and crops using nothing more than ropes and boards, has gained traction among young people seeking a thrilling adventure. Videos of these nocturnal escapades have flooded the app from anonymous accounts showing off their work. While crop circles are often falsely associated with extraterrestrial activity, experts suggest that the recent surge is the result of human mischief. Agricultural organizations have expressed concern over the potential damage to crops and have urged those participating in the trend to consider the consequences of their actions. As the phenomenon continues to spread, local authorities are working to identify those responsible and prevent further incidents. Farmers are being encouraged to report any suspicious activity on their property and to take measures to secure their fields. Coming up after the break, we'll have the latest on the ongoing heat wave and the electrical phenomena that have been sparking discussion in the DMV, along with the 10-day forecast with Dan.
I sat in my cubicle, fingers flying over the keyboard as I worked on the latest iteration of our data platform. The project, a collaboration with FEMA, was designed to optimize resource allocation during crises where air transport might be compromised. My screen displayed a complex network of nodes and edges, representing railway junctions and highway intersections across the country. The algorithm I developed used graph theory to calculate the most efficient routes between critical locations. The system factored in real-time data on track conditions, traffic patterns, and potential obstructions. It could adapt on the fly, rerouting supplies if a section of a route was suddenly rendered unusable. As I worked, my mind wandered occasionally to last night's date with Rachel, but I forced myself to refocus on the task at hand. "Donovan," a woman's voice tinged with surprise came from behind me. I swiveled in my chair, blinking as I registered the familiar face. Amanda, Rachel's friend from the bar, stood there, a visitor's badge clipped to her blazer. "You work for the State Department?" she said, her tone caught between a statement and a question. I nodded, confusion creeping in. "Yeah, I do. What are you doing here?" Amanda smiled, though something in her expression seemed off. "I'm actually here as a consultant, just on site for a meeting today." I tried to smile, feeling a bit awkward. "Sorry you had to come here. It's not exactly the most exciting place." Amanda laughed, but it sounded forced. Her expression shifted, growing serious as she took a long pause. "Actually, do think you could look at something for me?" Confusion crept over me again as I thought what she could possibly need my help with. "I don't know if I'm allowed," I joked weakly. "Most of our work here is classified." Amanda didn't laugh. Her eyes met mine. "It's something personal." "All right," I said, pushing aside my keyboard. "I can take a quick look." Amanda's shoulders relaxed slightly as she pulled a sleek laptop from her bag. I cleared a space on my desk, moving stacks of papers and a half-empty coffee mug. She set the computer down, opening it up methodically. "It's a video my dad sent," she explained, her voice low. "They're camping in California, my mom, dad, and brother. Like I told you guys last night. He sent it the other night, but when I rewatched it, I noticed something." I leaned forward, eyes fixed on the screen as Amanda queued up the video to some portion in the middle. She stepped back, turning away as if she couldn't bear to watch it again. I glanced at her briefly, before focusing back on the laptop. The video started abruptly, her father's face filling most of the frame. His weathered features crinkled into a smile as he addressed Amanda, launching into a detailed account of their camping activities. The audio blared through the speakers, echoing in the quiet office. I winced, my eyes darting around to see if anyone was bothered by the noise. Not knowing where to find the volume controls on Amanda's unfamiliar laptop, I let it play. I tried to take in every detail, squinting at the screen. The dark forest loomed behind Amanda's father as a shadowy backdrop. 20 seconds passed, and I felt a twinge of impatience, unsure of what I was supposed to be looking for. Another 10 seconds crawled by. I cleared my throat, ready to ask Amanda for clarification, when something caught my eye. In the background, barely visible in the gloom, a figure moved. Tall. Impossibly tall. It seemed to glide behind her father.
"Did you see it?" Amanda's voice was tense and expectant.
I stammered, unsure how to respond or what I had just witnessed. "Play it again," Amanda urged, almost sounding like a command. With hesitant fingers, I navigated the keyboard, rewinding the video. I played the video again, this time leaving my finger on the trackpad. As the shadowy figure appeared, I paused the footage. Leaning in close, I squinted at the screen, trying to make sense of what I was seeing. The figure was dark, barely distinguishable from the forest behind it. But as I studied it, I couldn't deny its unusual height. Still, it didn't seem like anything extraordinary, just a very tall, indistinct human shape. Unsure of what Amanda expected me to say, I hesitated before speaking. "Is that your brother?" Amanda's sharp intake of breath made me turn. Her face was a mix of frustration and disbelief. "My brother isn't fucking 8 feet tall." I flinched at her tone, turning back to the screen to avoid her glare. The figure loomed there, silent and still. The longer I stared, the more unnatural its height appeared. But the darkness obscured any details that might have explained what I was seeing. "Are there any more videos?" I asked, hoping for more context. Amanda shook her head. "This is the last one I got." Her words hung in the air, heavy with unspoken implications. I continued to stare at the screen, the paused image burning into my retinas. I struggled to find words. Amanda's eyes bored into me, demanding an answer I couldn't provide. "Do you think I should call the park rangers or something?" she asked, her voice tight with anxiety. I hesitated, grasping for a rational explanation. "Look, cameras can create some weird illusions sometimes," I offered weakly, "especially in low light. It might not be what it seems." Amanda's face hardened, clearly unconvinced. She snapped her laptop shut and slid it back into her bag. "I'm going to try to call the rangers," she said, her tone brooking no argument. I looked at her, words failing me. All I could manage was a silent nod as she turned and left my cubicle without another word, her footsteps fading into the ambient noise of the office.
Welcome back to WNTN DC, your trusted source for local news. I'm your host, Ashley Williams. Last night at approximately 10:30, air traffic at both Reagan National and Dulles International Airport was disrupted due to reported disturbances in the airspace. The FAA issued a ground stop for all flights at both airports for over an hour, causing delays and cancellations that left many passengers stranded. While the nature of these disturbances remains unclear, some eyewitnesses reported seeing unusual lights in the sky, leading to speculation about potential drone activity or even military exercises. However, officials from both the FAA and the Department of Defense have declined to comment on the specifics of the incident. The temporary grounding of flights also had a ripple effect on air traffic across the East Coast, with delays reported at several major airports as a result of the disruption in the DC area. As authorities continue to investigate the cause of last night's disturbances, travelers are advised to check with their airlines for updates on the status of their flights and to anticipate potential delays. We'll continue to follow this developing story and bring you the latest information as it becomes available. Stay tuned to WNTN DC for updates on this puzzling incident.
A couple of days later, I found myself stepping out of my apartment building into the warm evening air. The sun hung low in the sky, casting long shadows across the streets of Navy Yard. I adjusted my shirt collar and started walking towards Nationals Park, just a few blocks away. The streets buzzed with energy, filled with people heading to the game or out for Friday night drinks. I weaved through the crowd, trying to avoid the congestion. The Nationals were having a rough season, to put it mildly. Their dismal performance had at least one silver lining: cheap tickets. As I approached the stadium, the crowd thickened. Vendors hawked overpriced merchandise, and the air filled with the scent of hot dogs and popcorn. I scanned the sea of faces, looking for Rachel. I spotted her near the main entrance, standing out in her casual attire amidst a sea of red Nationals jerseys. She waved as I approached, a smile lighting up her face. "Hey," I said, giving her a quick hug. "Ready for some shitty baseball?" Rachel laughed. "As ready as I'll ever be. At least we're not pretending to be fans." I glanced down at our outfits, both of us in jeans and plain t-shirts. No team gear in sight. Rachel had grown up cheering for the Tigers, while I'd always been an Orioles fan. The Nationals were just convenient. We settled into our seats along the first base line, the field sprawling out before us. The Nationals were already down by 3 runs in the second inning. I leaned back, trying to get comfortable in the hard plastic seat. Between innings, I watched the grounds crew drag the infield. My mind wandered to Amanda and that unsettling video. I turned to Rachel, aiming for casual but hearing the strain in my voice. "Hey, have you talked to Amanda recently?" Rachel adjusted in her seat slightly. "Yeah, actually. Why do you ask?" I shrugged, trying to play it off. "Just curious. How's she doing?" Rachel hesitated, her eyes searching my face. "She's okay, I guess. But something weird is going on with her family's camping trip." My pulse quickened. "What do you mean?" "Well, Amanda said her dad called. Apparently they're staying in Sierra National Forest longer than planned. He told her they'd be there for a while," which confused Amanda. "It was only supposed to be a couple days." I nodded while looking out over the field, trying to hide the involuntary reaction on my face. Rachel lowered her voice, leaning in closer. "The strange part is, Amanda said her dad kept repeating himself, like saying the same things over and over. He was talking about mirrors? Saying something like, 'You can only see them in mirrors.' She seemed pretty worried about it." Rachel looked at me, just like Amanda had, as if she was expecting me to have some sort of answer to this riddle. I hesitated, weighing my options. The strange video had been gnawing at me, and Rachel's revelation about Amanda's dad only intensified my unease. Taking a deep breath, I decided to broach the subject. "Did she show you the video?" Rachel moved again uncomfortably, confusion evident on her face. "What video?" I grimaced, realizing I'd have to explain. Keeping my voice low, I told her about Amanda's unexpected visit to my office and the unsettling footage she'd shown me. As I spoke, Rachel's expression shifted from confusion to concern, then to something resembling hurt. I could see the unasked question in her eyes. Why hadn't I mentioned this before? Quickly, I explained that I hadn't thought much of it at the time, chalking it up to a trick of the light or camera malfunction. I dismissed it as nothing to worry about, not wanting to fuel unnecessary panic. Rachel's lips pressed into a thin line, her gaze dropping to her hands. I could tell she was processing this new information, trying to reconcile it with what she already knew about her friend's situation. Rachel silently pulled out her phone, her fingers moving swiftly across the screen. I didn't need to ask who she was texting. The air between us grew thick with unspoken tension. I turned my attention back to the game, pretending to be engrossed in the Nationals' latest attempt to close the gap. But my mind raced, replaying the eerie video and Amanda's father's strange behavior. A few innings passed, the game blurring into a monotonous rhythm of pitches, hits, and outs. I gradually steered our conversation away from Amanda, desperate to lighten the mood. I found myself recounting my brief stint as a third baseman in high school. The memory of that fateful game came flooding back, the crack of the bat, the searing line drive hurtling towards my head. I'd narrowly dodged it, feeling the rush of air as it whizzed past my ear. The incident had shaken me so badly that I'd hung up my glove for good, joking to Rachel that I'd suddenly discovered a passion for track and field. The safety of running in circles had never seemed so appealing. Rachel laughed and listened intently, her earlier tension seeming to ease. When I finished, she shared her own athletic history, regaling me with tales from her field hockey days. She'd played throughout high school and college, her eyes lighting up as she described the thrill of sprinting down the field with stick in hand. In the middle of the sixth inning, I noticed the Nationals manager trudging out to the mound. The first relief pitcher had been getting shelled, and it was clear his night was over. The manager raised his hand, signaling to the bullpen for a fresh arm. I turned to Rachel. "I'm gonna grab us a couple beers. Want anything else?" She shook her head, and I stood up, ready to navigate the crowded aisle. Just as I turned my back to the field, a collective gasp rippled through the crowd. Instinctively, I whipped around. Geese were falling from the sky, spiraling downward like shot-down fighter jets. They hit the infield with sickening thuds, their bodies lifeless before impact. One after another, they plummeted, littering the infield with feathered corpses. Rachel's hand clamped onto my arm, her fingers digging into my skin. Her other hand flew to her mouth, stifling a cry of shock. Around us, the crowd sat in stunned silence and occasional gasps as another one hit the ground. On the field, players froze in their positions, staring at the grisly scene unfolding before them. The relief pitcher, halfway to the mound, stopped in his tracks, his eyes fixed on the lifeless birds. I found myself in a trance, my gaze locked on the darkening expanse above. For 30 seconds, the geese kept falling, their lifeless bodies creating a grotesque pattern across the infield. Time seemed to slow, each second stretching into an eternity as we all struggled to process the spectacle. Eventually, after a few moments of staring, the grounds crew tentatively sprang into action. They emerged from the dugouts, large garbage bags in hand, and began the grim task of collecting the fallen birds. I sank back into my seat, my legs suddenly feeling weak. The thought of beer turned my stomach. Rachel's hand was still gripped tightly around my arm, her fingers trembling slightly. We stayed for another inning, but I couldn't focus on the game. My eyes kept drifting upward, scanning the darkening sky above the stadium.
Good evening, I'm Ashley Williams, and welcome back to WNTN DC. Tonight we're joined by Dr. Robert Thompson, astrophysicist from Georgetown University, to discuss some startling footage that's been circulating online. Dr. Thompson, what can you tell us about this video?
Well, Ashley, the video shows what appears to be a humanoid figure, approximately 8 feet tall, moving between houses in a suburban neighborhood in Illinois. Its limbs are unnaturally long and seem to bend at odd angles. It's tempting to want to believe in a video like this, but I've analyzed the footage, and while it's certainly unsettling at first glance, there are several elements that suggest it's likely a hoax.
We don't get a great look at it, but there is this moment here where it turns towards the camera and we see its face. From what I can tell, its eyes almost seem to take up most of its face. Doctor, what do you see here that makes you believe what we are watching is not real?
Haha, I think we've all seen this scene in the movies. Modern CGI is incredibly advanced. This thing's movements could easily be achieved with motion capture technology. Speaking from a scientific perspective, I think if these things didn't want to be seen, we wouldn't be seeing them. Though I must admit, the way the surrounding plants seem to wilt as it passes is a particularly chilling touch. I'd love to know how they pulled that one off.
But what about the multiple witnesses who claim to have seen this creature in person?
Mass hysteria is not uncommon in these situations. Once one person claims to see something, others often follow suit, convinced they've seen the same thing.
So you're saying there's no possibility this could be real?
In science, we never say never. But based on the evidence at hand, I'm 99% certain this is an elaborate hoax. We should be cautious about jumping to conclusions, especially about things like this. The psychological damage that this could have if the masses genuinely believed in it can cause massive problems.
Thank you, Dr. Thompson. We are reminding viewers to stay tuned for further developments on this story. Up next, we have a live report from Wendy Carter.
Sunday night, I found myself perched on a stool at Rachel's kitchen island, nursing a gin and tonic. The ice clinked against the glass as I watched her zoom about her apartment, a whirlwind of energy preparing for the night ahead. Tomorrow was the 4th of July, and we were gearing up for a party at her friend's place. The apartment was pretty small and felt even tighter with the modern art and overflowing bookshelves that filled the room. Being here, in Rachel's space, felt significant. I couldn't help but think this was a milestone in our relationship. Rachel emerged from her bedroom, lipstick in hand. "So, you'll probably meet Jen and Mark tonight," she said, leaning towards the mirror hanging in the hallway. "They're the ones hosting. Jen works with me on the Hill." I nodded, taking a sip of my drink. "What are they like?" "Oh, you'll love them," Rachel assured me, applying a swipe of red to her lips. "Jen's hilarious, always has the best stories about the chaos in Congress. And Mark's a craft beer enthusiast. You two will have plenty to talk about." I suppressed a confused grin as I struggled to make the connection on how I would relate to Mark in this facet. She disappeared back into her room, voice carrying as she continued. "There's also Alex and Sarah. They're newlyweds, disgustingly cute. And probably Jake, if he's not working, he's an ER doctor, has some wild tales." As Rachel vanished into her room once more, her phone buzzed on the kitchen counter. She darted back out, snatching it up with a grin. "It's Sammy," she exclaimed, her face lighting up. She answered, immediately tapping the speaker icon. "Hey, cuz, you're on speaker. Donovan's here too." "Hi, Sammy," I offered, raising my voice slightly. "Hey, Rachel. Hey, Donovan," Sammy's voice crackled through the phone, warm and enthusiastic. "How's DC treating you both?" Rachel leaned against the counter, twirling a strand of hair. "Can't complain. What's new with you?" "Well," Sammy paused dramatically. "I've got some news. I'm getting married." Rachel squealed, nearly dropping her phone. "Oh my God, Sammy, that's amazing. When? How? Who?" Sammy laughed, the sound tinny through the speaker. "It's Ben. You remember him from last Christmas? We're thinking next spring. Mom's already in full planning mode." "I'm so happy for you," Rachel gushed. "We have to celebrate when I'm back in Michigan next." "Absolutely," Sammy agreed. "You'll love the venue we're looking at. It's this old manor house, really beautiful. You can only see them in mirrors. The gardens are incredible." My blood ran cold. I froze, gin and tonic, halfway to my lips. Rachel's eyes widened, meeting mine in stunned silence. The conversation came to a halt. Rachel swallowed hard. "Wait, what did you say?" "I said the gardens are incredible," Sammy repeated, her tone confused. The conversation limped on for a few more minutes, Rachel's responses becoming increasingly strained. I could see the tension in her shoulders, the slight tremor in her hand as she clutched her phone. When she finally ended the call, silence fell over the apartment like a heavy blanket. Rachel set her phone down on the counter with exaggerated care, as if it might shatter at any moment. Her eyes met mine, wide and searching. The cheerful energy from earlier had evaporated, replaced by a palpable unease. "Donovan," she began, her voice barely above a whisper. "Did you hear what Sammy said?" I let my gaze drift, scanning the room as if the answer might be hidden somewhere among Rachel's decor. My mind raced, trying to make sense of what we'd just heard. The words echoed in my head. Finally, I looked back at Rachel. "Yeah," I admitted, my voice hoarse. "Yeah, I heard." Rachel's face was a mixture of confusion and concern, her brow furrowed as she stared at her phone. It was clear that Sammy's odd statement had shaken her more than she wanted to admit. I took a deep breath, setting my drink down. This time, I decided, I wouldn't let the silence linger. I had to try a different approach. "You know," I began, keeping my voice calm and steady, "coincidences like this are actually far more common than we think." Rachel looked up at me, her expression skeptical but curious. I pressed on. "Let me ask you something. How many people do you think it would take before you found two with the same birthday?" She blinked, caught off guard by the sudden change in topic. "I don't know. Maybe 180. I shook my head, allowing a small smile. "It's actually only 23 people before the probability is over 50%. It's called the birthday paradox in probability theory." Rachel's posture relaxed slightly as she considered this, still looking very skeptical of my math. I reached for a napkin and a pen from the counter, Look, with 23 people, you have 253 possible pairs. That's 23 choose 2, if you remember your combinatorics. I scribbled out the math, showing Rachel. Each of these pairs has about a 1 in 365 chance of sharing a birthday. Multiply it out, and the probability of at least one match is surprisingly high. Rachel leaned in, her eyes scanning my hasty calculations. I could see the gears turning in her head, momentarily distracted from our earlier unease. Think about how many phrases and sentences we hear every day. Thousands, probably. The chance of hearing something that seems oddly specific or coincidental is much higher than we'd expect. Our brains are wired to find patterns and meaning, even when there isn't any. Rachel nodded thoughtfully, her eyes losing some of their earlier worry. So you're saying it's just random chance? Rachel didn't seem convinced. Exactly, I replied, feeling a sense of relief. Our intuition often underestimates how likely certain events are.
In a shocking turn of events, the stock market has experienced a catastrophic downturn today, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average plummeting over 2,000 points, marking its largest single-day drop in history. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ have followed suit, with losses exceeding 15% across the board. Trading was halted multiple times throughout the day as circuit breakers were triggered in an attempt to stem the bleeding. Financial analysts are struggling to explain the sudden crash, but many are pointing to undisclosed national security concerns. Speculation is rampant that certain groups, including high-level government officials and corporate insiders, may have access to critical information that the general public does not. Notably, defense contractors and aerospace companies have seen their stock prices skyrocket amidst the broader market collapse, with Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman both up over 50% on the day.
Rachel and I made our way to Jen and Mark's apartment on U Street, an older building perched on the side of a hill which boasted a view that swept across the city skyline. As we climbed the stairs, the muffled sounds of music and laughter grew louder. Inside, the party was in full swing. Bodies filled the space, creating a lively atmosphere. The window AC unit was working overtime trying to cool the space. The living room opened onto a balcony, which was much larger than you would typically find in DC. A group had gathered to admire the view. Rachel's hand found mine, guiding me through the crowd. She began introducing me to faces that blurred together. Co-workers, college friends, neighbors. I nodded and smiled, but their names slipped away almost as quickly as they were given. Jen and Mark gave us the tour, as if we needed one for a one-bedroom apartment. They said that they would have a great view of the fireworks later tonight. Rachel then steered me toward Jake, an ER doctor at George Washington University Hospital. His eyes were tired, but he managed a warm smile as we shook hands. After Jake finished telling Rachel about his sister who was living in Michigan, the conversation bled into his work at the hospital. He began sharing some recent observations from his latest shifts. He described an unusual influx of patients exhibiting confusion and repetitive speech patterns. He said most of the patients could not even articulate why they had chosen to come to the hospital in the first place. However, Jake quickly dismissed his own concerns, attributing the phenomenon to the oppressive heat wave that had been blanketing the city. He explained how dehydration could lead to delirium, especially in vulnerable populations. His tone became more clinical as he detailed the physiological effects of extreme heat on the human body. As Jake moved on to chat with someone else, I noticed Rachel had been pulled into an animated conversation with a group of girls near the kitchen. Seeing an opportunity for a breather, I made my way to the balcony. The sliding door whispered open, and I stepped out into the night air. It felt surprisingly cooler than the cramped apartment, a welcome relief. The city sprawled before me, a tapestry of twinkling lights against the dark sky. A girl stood at the railing, wisps of cigarette smoke curling around her. She glanced over, offering a brief nod. "Hey," I said, moving to the opposite side. "Hi," she replied, turning back to the view. At my feet, a black Labrador lay sprawled on the deck, his tail thumping lazily against the wood. Baxter, I remembered, Mark and Jen's dog. His dark eyes looked up at me, seeming almost to smile. I leaned against the railing, letting the relative quiet of the balcony wash over me. The muted sounds of the party inside mingled with the distant hum of the city below. The girl at the railing turned to me, a wry smile playing on her lips. Let me guess, another government drone like the rest of them in there? I chuckled, still gazing out at the city lights. Yeah, I guess I am. She sighed, flicking ash from her cigarette. I was supposed to fly out of Reagan tonight, San Francisco. Needed a break from this swamp, you know? But all the late-night flights got grounded for some reason. I frowned, my eyes tracing the skyline. The girl stubbed out her cigarette and reached into her purse, pulling out a compact mirror. As she touched up her makeup, a bark caught my attention. Baxter had risen to his feet behind me, the hair on his neck raised, barking at the empty sky. I glanced up, seeing nothing but darkness punctuated by stars. When I looked back down, my gaze fell on the girl's compact. Hey, could I borrow that for a second? She laughed, but handed it to me anyway. What, need to check your lipstick? I ignored the jab and took the mirror, turning it over in my hand. I fumbled with it for a moment, but slowly, I was able to angle it towards the sky. I contorted my wrist, trying to scan the darkness above. Shit, I blurted. Startled, I fumbled the compact, letting it thud against the wood flooring. I snatched it up from the deck, my hands shaking as I repositioned it, trying to find the exact angle I just had. I swiveled the mirror around for a few moments, searching the sky for what I just saw. Finally, there, reflected in that small circle of glass, was an enormous, disc-shaped object. It hovered silently, its metallic surface catching the city's glow. As I watched, it began to move, gliding effortlessly across the sky. The girl peered at me, confusion etching her features. What the hell are you doing? There's nothing up there. I didn't answer. My eyes remained fixed on the mirror, tracking the impossible object as it traversed the night sky, invisible to the naked eye but undeniably present in the reflection. I held the mirror out, my eyes bouncing between the reflection and the empty sky above. I glanced back at Baxter, who had stopped barking, but his gaze remained fixed upward, looking more curious than threatening now. I searched the mirror's surface, but the object had vanished. With a shaky breath, I snapped the compact shut. Thanks, I muttered, handing it back to the girl without meeting her eyes. She took it, looking almost a bit annoyed. I turned away, my mind reeling. The balcony suddenly felt too exposed, too open. Without another word, I walked back inside, leaving the girl and her bewildered expression behind. Baxter followed me inside. I stumbled back into the party. The noise and heat hit me like a wall. I grabbed the first drink I saw on the kitchen table, not caring whose it was, and downed it in one go. The alcohol burned my throat, but I welcomed the sensation. As I tried to process what I'd seen, my eyes landed on an open door. Jen and Mark's bedroom. Without thinking, I walked in. Two girls were chatting inside, barely glancing at me as I entered. But I wasn't interested in them, my gaze locked onto what I was looking for, a large mirror mounted on the wall. I approached it, trying to act casual at first, but my resolve crumbled quickly. I grabbed the edges of the mirror and heaved it off the wall. It was heavier than I expected, forcing me to drag it across the floor. The girls stared at me as if I had two heads, but I ignored them. Shame abandoned me as I pulled the mirror through the crowded living room. Conversation stopped. People stepped back, watching in confusion. I heard Mark's voice. Donovan, what are you doing? I didn't answer. I reached the sliding door, struggling to open it while maintaining my grip on the mirror. Rachel's voice cut through the silence. Donovan, stop! What are you doing? The embarrassment in her tone was palpable, but I couldn't stop now. I hauled the mirror onto the deck. The smoking girl was still there, eyebrows raised, but seeming less surprised than the others. I positioned the mirror, angling it towards the sky. My arms ached from the effort, but I managed to prop it up at an angle by sliding a flower pot under the mirror. The party guests crowded around the door, staring at my bizarre behavior, but only the smoking girl had the right angle to see the mirror's reflection. Her eyes widened, cigarette forgotten between her fingers. She breathed, staring into the mirror. Holy shit.
Welcome back to WNTN DC, your trusted source for local news. I'm your host, Ashley Williams. This morning, the National Crime Information Center has reported an alarming spike in missing persons cases across the country, with a particular concentration in the DC metropolitan area. In the past 48 hours alone, you can only see them in mirrors. In the past 48 hours alone, local law enforcement agencies have received over 500 missing persons reports, a staggering 600% increase from the average. Don't look at their eyes. Authorities are struggling to keep up with the influx of cases, many of which, you can only see them in mirrors, involve individuals last seen in or around the Capitol. Police officials have, you can only see them in mirrors. Police officials, you can only see them in mirrors. 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 You can only see them in mirrors.
We left the party in a rush, our feet pounding the pavement as we headed towards Rachel's apartment. The night air now felt charged with an electric tension that made my skin crawl. Rachel's face was pale, her eyes wide with fear as we hurried through the streets of Northwest Washington. "We need to get out of here," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. "I'm going back to Michigan. It might not be any better there, but I need to try." I nodded, not trusting myself to speak. My mind was still reeling from what we'd witnessed in the mirror at the gathering. As we moved through the city, I observed that some individuals appeared completely unaware of the unfolding events, while others seemed frantic. On one side of the street, a band played obliviously in a backyard, while on the opposite side, people were hastily getting into their cars. We turned a corner, and suddenly the sky lit up. Fireworks. For a moment, I almost laughed at the absurdity of it all. Some of the fireworks reached their peak and exploded in brilliant bursts of color. But others seemed to hit something halfway up. They exploded prematurely, their light revealing glimpses of what we'd seen in the mirror, enormous, disc-shaped objects hovering silently in the sky. Rachel's grip on my arm tightened. Around us, people began to scream and gasp. For many, this was their first glimpse of what lurked above us. We turned another corner, and the sky erupted. More and more fireworks were being set off now, each explosion painting a terrifying picture. The saucers seemed to cover the entire skyline, a vast fleet hanging over the city. We picked up our pace as the fireworks overhead exploded against the invisible entities in the sky. Each burst of light revealed more of them, stretching as far as the eye could see. The screams around us grew louder, panic spreading through the streets like wildfire. As we approached Rachel's apartment, my mind raced, trying to recall the access roads and secret routes I'd mapped out during my project at work. These weren't your average streets. They were hidden pathways, known only to a select few, absent from any public GPS or map application. I pictured the intricate web of routes we'd generated during testing, each one a potential lifeline in this unfolding chaos. There was the old service road that snaked behind the Lincoln Memorial, the underground tunnel system beneath Foggy Bottom, and the narrow alleyways that crisscrossed through Georgetown. Each path burned into my memory, a possible escape from whatever was happening above us. We turned onto Rachel's street, and I saw a car screech out of her apartment's parking garage, tires squealing against the pavement. The building itself seemed eerily quiet. A few doors on the first floor stood ajar, as if their occupants had fled in a hurry. Rachel and I exchanged a glance before heading for the stairs. We descended into the parking garage, our footsteps echoing in the cavernous space. The air was stale, tinged with the acrid smell of exhaust, and something else I couldn't quite place. The garage itself was dimly lit, shadows stretching across empty parking spaces. The sounds of the overworked fans drowned out what was happening above us. "I parked near the back," Rachel said, her voice shaked. She pointed towards the far end of the garage, where the darkness seemed to gather more densely. "Rachel, give me the keys." She hesitated, her fingers gripping the key fob tightly. Her eyes met mine, filled with a mixture of fear and uncertainty, but then, with a small nod, she placed the keys in my hand. I pressed the key fob, and Rachel's car chirped to life towards the back of the garage, its headlights briefly illuminating the dim space. In that fleeting moment of light, a figure materialized 100 feet away, standing motionless between us and the vehicle. It took me a second to register what I was seeing. "Amanda," I called out, my voice echoed barely registering over the large fan near us. No response. Amanda stood there, her gaze seemingly locked with Rachel's. I turned to Rachel, expecting a reaction, but her face was a mask of shock, devoid of any discernible emotion. I scanned the garage, trying to detect if there was anyone else down here that I had not noticed. My eyes caught one of those convex mirrors that drivers used to see around corners in parking garages. In the mirror's reflection, where Amanda should have been, stood an impossibly tall figure. Its skin was a sickly grayish-green, with enormous eyes dominating most of its head. Its long, lanky arms that protruded from the top of the figure's 8-foot torso almost touched the ground. I blinked hard, looking between the mirror and Amanda's normal form before us. In the mirror, I could see minute details, the slight turn of its head, the twitch of its elongated fingers, movements entirely absent from Amanda's human appearance. "You can only see them in mirrors," I muttered while I turned my head to get a look at the rest of the garage. I turned back to Rachel, who remained frozen in place. "Don't move," I instructed, but she didn't even acknowledge me. Slowly, I began to circle Amanda, inching closer to another convex mirror on the opposite side of the garage. I clambered onto a nearby car, my heart pounding as I pried the mirror loose. Keeping one eye on Amanda's motionless form, I turned my back to her and held the mirror out in front of me to look back at her. The tall figure remained, staring at me as I stood on the hood of the car. Hopping down, I slowly circled my way back to Rachel, both of my hands gripping the mirror in front of me, keeping my back to Amanda while I watched the figure in the reflection, its head slowly turning as it tracked my movements. "You need to see this, look," I explained, but Rachel remained unresponsive. I attempted to show her how I held the mirror by turning my back to her and holding it up towards her. When I did, it was not Rachel who appeared in the mirror.